part B of controlling the mind, the last frontier. We're here in Psalm 139, and let's continue on in verse 12. We're going to learn some very basic principle things here that we will expand out later on in understanding on how our minds work, what we need to do, how we need to think, and how God's Spirit works with us, how the Spirit of man works, and so forth. Let's continue on here in verse 9. Yea, the darkness does not hide you, but the night shines as the day. As is the darkness, so is the light to you. Verse 13 is a key and important verse, the first sentence there. For you have possessed my reins. Now, what are the reins? You look it up and it says, well, it's defining a kidney. They don't know whether that is true or not. But when you look at the human brain, what does it look like? It looks like two kidneys. Now, the reins has to do with God leading you, guiding you, testing you, testing your mind, testing your heart, testing your choices, seeing how you respond to God, and then God responding to you. Now let's continue on, because this becomes the heart and core of how God is creating human beings today. See, God is creator, and he's always creating, and with human beings, and he wants us to learn this with animals, though they reproduce themselves, there is no eternal purpose in them. There is an eternal purpose in creating human beings, and he wants us to share with his creation through the power of procreation to reproduce ourselves and to reproduce every human being as distinct and unique. Even twins have minor, subtle differences in their genes. They are not totally exactly the same. Now, for you to understand the power of God, what I want you to do is take a pen. And on your notebook, I want you to put the point down and just kind of roll it back and forth and make a dot. That was your initial size. So lest we get all thinking about how great and important we are, that's all of you when you were first conceived. Now, yet it is so prolific. You think of the male part of creation of a human being in the womb of the mother, should be his wife, but nevertheless, in every situation that there is, you cannot get away from the fact that in order for there to be a human being, you need a male sperm and a female egg. Even if they do it in vitro, they are still doing the process that God created. Now, in that little speck, it contains everything about you. How you're going to be made, your basic height, what you're going to look like, even some individual characters and talents and instincts that, not instincts, but way of thinking and doing that come along, although the way of thinking is more related to education and choice than anything else. But let's notice how absolutely scientific this is. And with this series, I also want to start doing some background work for the next book I want to write, which is From a Speck of Dust to a Son of God. And I want to see if I can get some pictures from the National Right of Life Association, I might be able to get them at a far less expensive than if I went to some professional photo place to get them. All right. Verse 13, next sentence. You have knit me together in my mother's womb. See, when the father's sperm impregnates the mother's egg, the egg seals itself up immediately, and there's a 480,000 volt of electricity that takes place at that point. And I think that's a reflection of the spirit of man given right at that point. Because the last verse in James, the second chapter, says, the body is dead without the spirit. Well, likewise, human life must have the spirit of man to start. Otherwise, there's no life. And then it starts automatically from there, according to the plan that God designed. It's not like an external shock that you would touch an electric wire. It is an internal voltage from the electrical power within the body and the power that's within the egg and the sperm. But as soon as there is the penetration by the sperm into the egg, it seals off. No other sperm can get in there. You are now who you are at that instant. The only difference between what you are now is growth from the time of conception until birth, and then growth later on in life, and so forth. And they can show this, they know this today, that you're knit together, you are made in a pre-designated sequence of instructions that God put in the genes and chromosome, directed by the Spirit of God that is put into every human being, the spirit of man. All right, now let's read this, then we'll look at some other things here concerning it. You have knit me together in my mother's womb. Oh, there is an ad that the National Right to Life has. They've been running politically, which is this. They let you hear the heartbeat of a 28-day-old baby, which substantiates that if you have a heart beating, you have life, you're a person, you're a separate individual, see. And so, what you might say is this. For childbearing, the womb becomes the central support system for God's creation. Because God is creating in every woman who becomes pregnant another human being made in the likeness of God, whether male or female. And this is why abortion is so hideous and absolutely just awful. It is child sacrifice and murder at the earliest possible time. And there is a presidential candidate who may end up being president who actually believes in infanticide. Obama is his name. Because he voted against the bill 4 times to save botched abortion children who survived the abortion. See, now they've outlawed late-term abortion, but how do they get around it? See, because Satan the devil is insidiously evil and connected with evil minds, and we'll understand about the wicked a little later here as we go through the series. They will figure a way around the law. So rather than have him partially born and then take an instrument and pierce the skull and suck out the brains, the very central part of the life of that newly created human being, they now go into the womb and insert a needle and kill the baby in the womb and then have a stillborn. And various stages of abortion are done 3,000 times a day in America. And if there's any judgment of God against this nation, it's going to be based on that. People get all upset about destroying the environment and the creation of God, how we need to take care of it, but they are the very ones who promote abortion. And they are destroying the greatest creation of God, new human beings that he's creating in the womb. Because it says right here, you have knit me together in my mother's womb. God did it. God is doing it. That's why God insists upon marriage, father and mother, so that they will be responsible when children come into the world to take care of them, to love them, to feed them, to teach them, to rear them. All of this comes out from, you shall have dominion over the earth and multiply and replenish it. Let's continue on, verse 14. Your works are marvelous, and my soul knows it very well. Not something? You can even look at the animals and see they reproduce, so we can learn from that. I mean, and isn't it a fantastic thing that God has done with birds? They can't fly around being pregnant, otherwise they couldn't fly. So they lay eggs, and then they sit on them and hatch them. Except the ostrich, it lays an egg and lets the heat and sun do it, you know. And I think God created the ostrich to show that there are some things that God created that are stupid. And he did it deliberately so that human beings could look at that and say, now, if you act like an ostrich toward your offspring, as ostriches do, you're stupid. All right, let's go on. Verse 14, I will praise you, for I am awesomely and wonderfully made. And I don't think that there is a single mother or father that the first look at their child, they do not have the same thought. Isn't that amazing? But remember, it started with a speck of dust. And at 28 days old, it's almost a full-fledged human being, an inch in length. Verse 15, my substance was not hidden from you. Now, substance is the same scientific word that is used today to describe the clumps of cells as they are developing before they show human form. But nevertheless, those cells are developing and multiplying and reproducing. And what causes them to do it? We'll see in just a minute. My substance was not hidden from you when I was made in secretly and intricately formed me in the lowest parts of the earth. Now, that's talking about the womb, the very special part that God created, which only women have to produce children. Now, notice verse 16. Your eyes did see my substance, yet being unformed. So God is involved. This is a creation of God. Whether by deliberation for people who want children, whether by accident for those who go out and commit adultery or fornication and have children, God is still involved in the creation of that child. Now notice, and in your book, all my members were written. See, that ties together with the last part of verse 13. You have knit me together in my mother's womb, and in your book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned. And that's exactly the process of creating a new human being made in the image of God in the womb of the mother. Now notice, which in continuance were fashioned when as yet there were none of them. Before you could even see it. Verse 17, how precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they are more than the sand. When I awake, I am still with you. Now let's come to the book of Job and see how this is done. Let's come to Job 32. That's the next book after Proverbs in the New Bible. Just a few pages over. Job 32. And if you remember just this one thing, you'll be able to understand the book of Job a whole lot more. That everything that Job did was because God already said you should do those things in the first place. So it was never his righteousness. What he did was according to the will of God. So he can't say, look what I've done. God has taken away my righteousness. Just remember that. Go back and read the book of Job. Oh, some of the book of Job is really great. Job 32. Let's start right there in verse 1 so we can get kind of the story flow here. Verse 1, Job 32, page 814. These three men ceased to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Then was kindled the anger of Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, of the family of Ram. His wrath burned against Job because he justified himself rather than God. Also his wrath was kindled against his three friends because they had found no answer and yet they condemned Job. Now Elihu waited to speak to Job because they were older than he in days. When Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of these three men, then his wrath was kindled, and Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, answered and said, I'm young, and you're very old. Therefore I was afraid and dared not show my opinion. I said, the aged should speak, and multitude of years should teach wisdom. Verse 8 is the key. But there is a spirit in man, and this is the heart and core that is central to the mind. There is a spirit in man, and as we will see, is called the spirit of man, which God gives to every human being. And the inspiration of the Almighty gives them understanding. So God uses the spirit of man so that we learn, that we understand, that we can even be inspired of God through that. Now come over here, come down here to verse 18. For I am full of the matter, the spirit within me constrains me. Behold, my inner being is as wine which has no vent. Just welling up in him. See? God gave us these feelings and these things and the way to react and so forth. It is ready to burst like new wineskins. I gotta get this off my chest. I will speak so that I may be refreshed. I will open my lips and answer. Let me not, I pray you, accept any man's person. I'm not going to neither let me give flattering titles unto men. I'm not a politician, guys. Okay? For I do not know how to give flattering titles to any man, else my maker would soon take me away. I think that would be important for everyone who considers himself religious to understand. All right? Now, let's come here to chapter 33. Verse 1, wherefore, Job, please hear my speech and hearken to all my words. Behold, now I have opened my mouth, my tongue is spoken in my mouth. My words shall be from the uprightness of my heart, and my lips will clearly speak knowledge. Notice where he starts. Right where we started today. The Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. And that's true of every human being. You are physical, but you are a spiritual creation made to be recreated spiritually into the very sons and daughters of God. So that's something. Now, let's continue on. Let's see a little more about the spirit of man. Let's come to Zechariah. Book of Zechariah, which is next to the last book before Psalms, Zechariah 12 and verse 2. No, it's verse 1. Zechariah 12, verse 1, page 699. The burden of the word of the Lord for Israel, thus says the Lord, who stretches forth the heavens and lays the foundation of the earth and forms the spirit of man within him, which then connects the creation of all human beings with the creation of the heavens and the earth, and forms the spirit of man within him. Now, what does the spirit of man do? It gives life and intelligence and thought and ability to learn. Now, let's come back here to 1 Corinthians, the second chapter. And we will be coming back here again later on, too, as we get further into the series, as to how we know and understand spiritual things. But 1 Corinthians, the second chapter, and let's see what Paul says about it here, which is very important. Let's pick it up here in verse 11. 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 11. For who among men understands the things of man except by the spirit of man which is in him? So this gives us understanding, life, intellect, and everything concerning the spirit of man. Now let's see what other quality that this does for all human beings, because human beings are the only ones who can think outside of their bodies. In other words, their thoughts and so forth can think beyond time and space. Why is that? Let's come back here to Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. And it's because of the spirit of man that is in him. Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. And here's a very, I think, very profound verse that separates man from the animals. Ecclesiastes, let's get there. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 11, page 836. Let's come back to verse 1 to see how he leads up to verse 11 here. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 1, page 835. To everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under the sun. And the overall purpose is what God is doing, which we will focus on here a little bit. A time to be born. We've covered how that relates to us. A time to die. And yet every man wants to live forever. Why? Why does everyone want to live forever? We'll answer it here in just a minute. In every society, they have some kind of philosophy or religion which then they count on to live beyond this life. Why is that universally so? Now, the Bible tells us how it's going to happen, but nevertheless, it is still within all human beings. Well, comes time to die. A time to plant, a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, shows the whole life cycle of human beings, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, time to throw away stones, a time to gather stones together, time to embrace, time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain, a time to lose. Sounds like the stock market today, doesn't it? Huh? A time to keep, a time to throw away, a time to tear, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, a time to speak, a time to love, a time to hate, a time of war, a time of peace. This just sounds like a summary of individual human history and history of mankind together, doesn't it, huh? Yes. Verse 9. What profit does he have who works in that which he labors? So a person dies and you say, he's had this great achievement, that great achievement, he's done this, done that, done the other thing, and people say, oh, what a shame that he died. He was such, you know, really contributed so much, see. But Solomon also says, how does the wise man and the rich man die? He says, just like the fool. They all die. And yet, isn't this a profound thing that human beings have? Now, I want you to think on this really hard. Though you know there's past history, can you think in your own mind when you weren't here? No. Though you know you're going to die, and maybe you're getting closer to death. Well, every day we're closer to death than we were the day before. But then you add to that years and years and years and years and years, you know. There's a time to die. But can you think of a time when you won't be here other than to plan for it, for your family and survivors? No, you can't think of it because man wants to live forever. Why? Because God put it in man, because that's ultimately God's purpose, his way. We'll see it here in just a minute. Verse 11, I've seen the travail which God has given to the sons of men to be exercised by it, for good or for worse, you know. Verse 11, he has made everything beautiful in its time. And after that, when you look in the mirror, you know you're getting closer to the time to die. Next sentence, here's the key. He has also set eternity in their heart. That's why men universally think these things. God has not left man totally disconnected from him, even though they're sinners. And even the worst criminal, the most hateful human being that could possibly be, locked up in prison for life, covered with tattoos from head to toe, God still gives what? Life, breath, thought, though it's evil, until when? They die. And just like Jesus said, you know, God sends the rain on the just and on the unjust. He has also set eternity in their heart so that man can find out the work that God makes from the beginning to the end, if he searches it out rightly. Now, isn't that something? And also with the spirit of man and this yearning, this hungering and thirsting that is in every human being for something greater beyond themselves and to live forever, God has put it in every human being. Now, some who reject God, like we covered there during the Feast of Ray Kurzweil and the singularity is near, they're taking that and channeling it without God to try and achieve their own form of immortality, which may be considerably more high-tech than what the pharaohs did, but nevertheless, they thought they were going to live forever too. Now, I think that's quite a thing, isn't it? That tells you the ability and the expansiveness of the mind and what it really is like. Now, the reason that the controlling the human mind is the last frontier, let's look at how, right here in chapter, right here in chapter 4 of the book, Making a Good Brain Great. And what we will see is this, is that our brains are absolutely fantastic. No, it's chapter 3. God gave us a mind and brain so that we can function at all the levels, emotionally, intellectually, recreatively, etc. He gave us the mind that we need to accomplish what God wants us to accomplish in this life. Now, here are some things about your brain that you probably never knew that's true with all human beings. Now, here's a quote he has on it. Your brain is, chapter 3, your brain is the most complicated organ in the universe. Did we just read, God put eternity in the heart of man? All right. Now, he puts a quote here by Greg Iles from the book Footprints of God. The brain has a storage capacity of 6 million years of the Wall Street Journal. This is why they want to get in and control the mind. And that's why the ultimate at the end with the mark of the beast is so absolutely ungodly, because it takes away choice, it takes away heart, it takes away thought, it takes away all of the things that God gave human beings. Now, quote, page 20. Your brain is the most complex, mind-blowing organ in the universe. It weighs only about 3 pounds, usually around 2% of the body's weight. Unbelievably, given that it is the bedrock of personality, some think even the soul, and we can say we know the spirit because the Bible tells us that, it is 80% water. The brain uses 20% of the oxygen we breathe and about 20% of the calories we consume. When whole body scans are performed on people, they show the brain to be so active compared to the rest of the body, it looks like a small, powerful heater, while everything else appears ghost-like. Because your brain is always working, even when you're sleeping. And we're going to see that in testing the reins, that God even uses your deep sleep at night to teach you things. Now, I got an email from a man the other day, and he said that he'd related all of his disappointing church experience and gave up keeping the commandments of God and went back into the world. But God wasn't done with him, because remember what we've said many times, as long as there's life, there's hope. So God was beginning to draw him back. And he's wondering, what should I do? And he prayed. He said, God, what should I do? So he went to bed, got up in the morning, and the thought was burned in his brain. God is reproducing himself. So he got online and ended up at our website. All right, now let's continue on his description of the brain. This shows how God can interact with people. Now, even just the spirit of man, how many people have said, well, they're working on a problem, they're thinking on something, they're trying to design something, and they said, okay, I'm going to go to bed, and their mind is still working when they're sleeping, and they wake up in the morning, and there's a solution. Now, that's happened to me. I know it's happened to you, and so forth. Now, here's your brain. This is why it says, above all things, guard the door of your mind with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. The brain contains more than 100 billion neurons, also called nerve cells or brain cells, which is about the number of stars in the Milky Way galaxies. Isn't it interesting? God has put eternity in the heart of man, in even the way he has designed the brain. It also has trillions of supportive cells called glia. Each neuron is connected to other neurons, and while I'm reading this, my brain is going. While you're hearing this, your brain is going, and your brain is working, and the neurons are working, and they're making impressions upon your brain. Each neuron is connected to other neurons by as many as 40,000 individual connections called synapses. That's between the cells. That's why you can change your brain, because your brain is molded by how you think. That's why we started out. As a man thinks in his heart, so he is. That's why there's repentance. That's why there's God's Spirit. We're going to see this is going to be fantastic when we get done with this, okay? Continuing now, multiply 100 billion neurons times 40,000 synapses. The brain has more connections than there are stars in the universe. God has put eternity into the heart of man. A piece of brain tissue the size of a grain of sand contains 100,000 neurons and 1 billion synapses, all talking to one another. That's your brain. And the thing that Satan wants to do is to take control of your brain. And what God wants you to do is to use your brain the way he designed it, with the addition of his Spirit, to fulfill his purpose. We'll pick up there next time. For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.